But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that's going to determine what the future will bring. I have to remind you, the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They happen to be my views, the views of our guests, the views of our callers, and of course we welcome your calls from out across America at 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. But please hold your calls until we ask for our calls, because right now we have this on the line, Chris Pinto, where we're going to be talking about his wonderful DVD, The Secret Mysteries of America's Beginning. And, you know, if you've ever looked at the back of the dollar bill, you'll find a strange-looking emblem there. It's an unfinished pyramid, capped by an all-seeing eye. And the question is, what's that doing on the back of the dollar bill with a slogan underneath, Novo Ordo Seclorum, the new secular order? Now, why is that on the back of the dollar bill? Well, there's so many strange things that are going on. You know, one of the things, I don't know how many of our listeners out there ever listened to the X-Files, but Mulder, the FBI agent who had been given the job of tracking the X-Files, had some signs up on his wall of his office, his basement office, and one of them said, "The truth is out there." And then another one said, "It's hidden in plain sight." And I think that the truth is out there. I think they hide their emblems in plain sight. You'll see them all the time. You see the emblem of the secret societies on the screen of CBS, there in the right lower quadrant, whenever you watch CBS television. If you had gone to the World Future Society website, of course, their logo until recently was a circle with three sixes in it. And, of course, that's the Trilateral Commission's symbol as well. Except where the sixes meet in the center, they make up an upside-down broken cross. The broken cross, of course, the defeat of Christianity. And, of course, we find the people who control the President of the United States today, specifically Mr. Dick Cheney, just happened to come from the Trilateral Commission before he became the Vice President of the United States. And the people who control the monetary system, both Paul Volcker and then his successor, Alan Greenspan, both came from the Trilateral Commission. There are only about 300 people in it. You'd think that they might be able to find somebody to run our government who didn't belong to these secret covert groups that are founded in the occult. Well, that is the background. Chris, thanks so much for being with us today.
Well, thank you very much for having me on again, Dr. Stan.
Well, let's talk a little bit about what motivated you to put together this video, The Secret Mysteries of America's Beginning.
Well, it's something that I stumbled across, this whole idea of America as the New Atlantis, and this concept of the Great Atlantean Plan, which is this a plan for rebuilding the lost empire of Atlantis, according to the writings of Plato and so on. And just the idea that this is a concept that goes back thousands of years. It's something that's been a dream or an ancient hope in the minds of men, and supposedly contained in these secret societies, and that they had always dreamed of one day rebuilding the Atlantean Empire, but this time it would be a perfect empire. It wouldn't have the flaws of the old Atlantis, supposedly. And then learning that this new Atlantis concept was really the backbone and the heart of the whole New World Order movement, and that's what the New World Order is all about. It's about building this new Atlantis, which is supposed to be like paradise on Earth.
And, of course, I fear it will not be a paradise on Earth. I fear it will be a hell on Earth. But we'll be back in just a moment with Chris Pinto as we explore the ideas of the New Atlantis, the secret mysteries of America's beginnings. Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay. Our guest today is Chris Pinto, and he has produced a wonderful video. It's called The Secret Mysteries of America's Beginnings. And Chris, weren't you actually back in New York? Didn't they actually show this at the New York Film Festival?
They did. It was at the New York International Independent Film and Video Festival, which concluded, I guess, around the 14th or so of this month. We were one of the featured films there, one of the official selection, as they say, of the festival, and got a good rating from the festival itself, and are just waiting to see whether or not we won any kind of an award, which they won't release for a couple of weeks now. But yeah, it was really kind of refreshing to see a venue like that take an interest in the film, because we've engineered it in such a way, we've taken kind of a History Channel style approach. While we're Christians and we believe that these things are the fulfillment of Bible prophecy, and that what they really point to is the fulfillment of what God's been declaring for thousands of years through you know, the prophets Daniel and Zechariah and in the book of Revelation, and really throughout all the scriptures, that all these things that God has foretold are coming to their climax and will ultimately arrive at what we know as Christians to be Armageddon. But it's very interesting to see how it's unfolding. And the reason that we're doing this, for two reasons. One, to edify our fellow Christians so that they might have an understanding of things like these secret societies, that they might know about Freemasonry, its origins, other secret groups like the Rosicrucians that most people are really not familiar with at all. I've been surprised talking to a lot of Christians that know a lot about the New World Order movement and what's behind it, but they have very little knowledge about this Rosicrucian brotherhood that goes back, conceivably, back to the time of Christ and the apostles. If you believe one version of the story, of course, they trace themselves back to ancient Egypt and so on. And this was something that I learned a lot about while doing the research. And I didn't realize what a pervasive impact Rosicrucianism has on Masonry, on the Knights Templar, on really all these the whole theology of these secret societies, because it's very specifically the combining of Christianity with the ancient mystery religion. That's the symbolism behind the rose and the cross.
Hold that thought for just a moment, please. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest is Chris Pinto. And it's important that people understand a little bit about the Rosicrucians. Now, I live in Santa Cruz, and many people listening to the program right now live in Santa Cruz. Most are unaware of the fact that there is a great Rosicrucian temple over in San Jose, just across the hills from where we are, one of the two, at least, overt Rosicrucian temples in the United States. There are web pages put out by the Rosicrucians, which is an ancient secret society that is dedicated to the fulfillment of the goals of the mystery religions. Wouldn't that be right?
Mm. Absolutely. They are the very heart. I mean, in fact, they glorify the ancient mystery religions. They glorify things like Gnosticism. If you go to a Rosicrucian website, the AMORC website, the Ancient Mystical Order of the Rose and Cross, that's what that stands for, you'll see they make no bones about their origins and combining those things with the elements of the Christian faith. And that's the reason I think Rosicrucianism today is so significant is because of the ecumenical movement, this move to try and unite the religions of the world. We saw it with Pope John Paul II in his meeting in Assisi in 1986, I think it was, and then again in 2002, I believe, when he held yet another meeting with all these leaders from the world religions. And he told them, you know, they all prayed for peace, and he said, we're all praying to the same God. It's these elements in Freemasonry, which opens its doors to people of all faiths, insists you must believe in a God, but any God will do, and embraces all avatars or way-showers or Christs or Messiahs, whether it's Buddha or Zoroaster or Jesus, as all one and the same. And this seems to have a very direct lineage to the Rosicrucian order and the principles of Rosicrucianism. And the Rosicrucians, especially, if you wanted to learn the difference between Rosicrucianism and Freemasonry, whereas Masonry is into the Egyptian mystery religion and focuses very much on morality and so on, with Rosicrucianism you get into the what I would call a deeper, more magical occult realm, where they are specifically communicating with angelic spirits and beings and so on. And we show in the documentary Dr. John Dee, who's thought by some to be the founder of the modern Rosicrucian movement, and in time it was taken over. Sir Francis Bacon became the chief of the Rosicrucians in England. But they were specifically into this idea that communicating with either angels or demons, that these spirits, these powers and principalities, could bestow upon you marvelous gifts of knowledge and insight and so on that could be used for the benefit of mankind. And that's really what Rosicrucianism is all about.
And, of course, they sent their agents to the United States somewhere in the 1640s, 1650 time period to take over control of our country and, of course, to then use our military and our financial power that they knew would be here one day to bring about this Novus Ordoris Seclorum. In other words, to bring about this world government and this new world religion. And they've been working, going back over, well over 300, going on 400 years now, to accomplish their goal. They know exactly what they're doing. They leave their emblems everywhere. They hide them in plain sight. They are here. They're working at the upper echelons of our government. And just as they were working at the upper echelons of the American government in 1782, shortly after the American Revolution, where two people affiliated with the Rosicrucians accepted the emblem, the unfinished pyramid, Kappa, the all-seeing eye, that was hidden then on the back of the Great Seal of the United States for 150 years, and then put on the back of the American dollar bill, because by 1935 most Americans had no idea of the significance of the occult religions or their symbol on our currency.
Yeah. Absolutely. And, you know, one of the things that I remember, the going to Temple Church in London for the documentary, we went to England and got to go to Temple Church in London. We went up to Rossam Chapel, went into the city of Westminster, Westminster Abbey and so on. But at Temple Church in London, in the just inside the rotunda, the Templars would build these round churches, and that's how they were often recognized. And in fact, some people believe that the Jefferson Memorial, because Jefferson was very much into the mystery teachings, that while it's based on the Rotunda in Rome, that it's also something that was picked up by the Knights Templar. But anyway, the Templars had this Rotunda there, but you go inside, and we show at one point kind of an archway that's built into the wall there in Temple Church. And along the archway, you see like this golden arch, and carved within it are all these red roses that go along the archway. And it's this symbol of the rose. And one of the things that our mystery experts talk about in the documentary is that this symbol of the rose and the cross are very ancient symbols, and they go back thousands of years. And they have symbolized for a very long time this concept of secrecy, these secret orders. Of course, we know Dan Brown and his book, The Da Vinci Code, which is, you know, about to explode in the theaters here, I think on Friday, talks about the idea of sub rosa, you know, secret societies operating beneath the rose, in other words, in secrecy and so on. And it's very, very interesting to see the pervasiveness of these principles and teachings and so on, and to recognize that through these things, all of these secret orders are intertwined, and ultimately they all obey, to a greater or lesser degree, the same belief system.
Well, I think, you know, it's so interesting that you went to Rossam Chapel, and anybody who's read Dan Brown's The Da Vinci Code or goes to see it, I hope you won't, but if you do, why, of course, it ends there at Rossam Chapel, because Rossam Chapel really is key to an understanding of the ancient mystery religions and the reflection on what's going on today, and at least that was one of the right things that Dan Brown got. He got that right in his book. Most of it, of course, is totally fabrication. There really is no, or never was, a prior sign. It was a clever scam. The Opus Dei wasn't around at the time of Da Vinci. It was actually, it wasn't, it didn't, wasn't originated until the early 1900s. But Roslyn Chapel, why don't you tell them a little bit about Roslyn Chapel and why that is so important? Because the chapel was dedicated in 1492. People think it's a Christian chapel, but is it really?
No, in fact, even today, the people who are in charge of it, you know, they say it was initially dedicated as a chapel to St. Matthew, but it was built by Freemasons who seem to have had some kind of connection with the Knights Templar, or that William St. Clair, who commissioned and built the chapel, that in his ancestry there was a Knight Templar influence. And it's the Templar history is interesting. Of course, we know they were persecuted for getting involved in Satan worship and all this kind of thing. And it's believed that they picked up certain other traditions while they were in the Holy Land and whatnot. And so after they were persecuted for worshiping Lucifer and whatnot, and burned at the stake and tortured and all this kind of thing, they escaped, and it's believed they went to hide in Masonic lodges. And some people believe that they then began to promote this idea of ecumenism within Masonry. Why? To counteract the persecutions that they had suffered, supposedly. And so we find at Roslyn Chapel now, some centuries later after the fall of the Templars, this chapel that's built with Christian iconography in there. You've got images of Christ and the crucifixion and the Virgin Mary and so on, but intermixed with them, you've got all of this pagan symbolism, these green man images, and the green man, for those who don't know, is this disembodied head that usually has some kind of vegetation coming out of its mouth, and it symbolizes the ancient fertility god. With that, you've got images of demons, carved into the wall. You've got these various occult images and skeletons and skulls and all kinds of strange things going on in there.
Yeah.
And so, as the director of Roslyn Chapel admits, people going into the chapel aren't quite sure what it is they're supposed to do.
And of course, when you get the video or DVD, it's both DVD and video, isn't it?
Yes, DVD primarily, but we do have video copies available.
And of course, you'll actually see Roslyn Chapel immortalized by Dan Brown, but really, of course, a very important occult center for the entire world.
Yeah, it really is, because there you have all of these different religions represented. And back in 1492, which shows just how far back this movement goes, here you have the Rosicrucian principle of combining Christianity with the various religions of the world. And this is what seems to be moving forward, especially through the 20th century, into this one world religion that's prophesied in the Bible.
And we see increasingly this effort to, you know, be tolerant of our religions. Nobody has the real truth. We've all got to get along together. Christians are so intolerant. In fact, you tolerate just about everything except Christian belief today.
Exactly. It's like it's okay. You could, you know, there can be all of these anti-Christian books, anti-Christian movies, anti-Christian commentaries on TV and in newspapers. But if anybody made a commentary against Islam or Buddhism or Hinduism and so on, then you'd be seen as intolerant and you're persecuting somebody else for their belief or whatnot. It's an upside down system.
And of course, there really is a conspiracy against Christianity today. You see it on every turn. That's why the Supreme Court, they put Masons onto the Supreme Court to do God and prayer out of our schools. Between 1940 and 1941 and 71, the Masons controlled the U.S. Supreme Court in majorities of 5-4 to 8-1, and not one person in America will tell you that. We'll be back in just a moment here at Radio Liberty. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest is Chris Pinto. We're talking about his DVD. It's entitled The Secret Mysteries of America's Beginnings. And certainly one of the things that I thought was so fascinating was the fact that you went to the Philosophical Research. What's that organization, Southern California?
Yeah, the Philosophical Research Society, founded by Masonic philosopher Manly P. Hall, I think back in, it was about the mid-1930s. The exact year escapes me, but may have been 1934, 1935, right around there. But Hall apparently was financed by some wealthy financier who learned of him and his research and his teachings and so on, and bankrolled him and just told him, at least this was a story told to me by the president of the society today, that this wealthy benefactor agreed to bankroll Manly Hall so he wouldn't have to, you know, work at a regular job or whatever, and he could just dedicate his life to promoting the ancient mystery wisdom that he had been exploring.
Well, of course, the ancient mystery teachings have been around going back to the time of ancient Babylon. You find them at every level. You find them in ancient Egypt and ancient Assyria. You find them during the Babylonian captivity. They were the basis of the Kabbalah. They were the basis of Gnosticism. And they were the basis of the Templar beliefs, the Rosicrucian beliefs, the Masonic beliefs. Not the average Mason. He doesn't understand the mysteries, but if you read certainly Albert Pike, he will tell you that the mysteries, the ancient mysteries, were the foundation of Masonry, and modern-day Masonry is simply built upon those ancient mysteries that all go forward towards, you know, this idea of a universal religion and, of course, creating this world government, this perfect society that was destroyed at the time of the Great Flood.
Yeah, that's exactly it. I mean, I always go to the scripture where Jesus said, as it was in the days of Noah, so shall it also be at the coming of the Son of Man. And, of course, many Christians believe that this concept of Atlantis is really talking about the antediluvian world, and that the destruction of Atlantis is really another flood story, a story of how the ancient world was destroyed by the wrath of God because of their rebellion. And so the idea of rebuilding the new Atlantis has this haunting imagery of reconstructing this antediluvian world that God condemned. And that's really where, I mean, I believe, and I think, you know, a lot of Christian researchers believe, all this is headed. While they're trying to build paradise on earth, it's paradise on man's terms. It's man trying to save himself. Which is, I think, the picture of the Tower of Babel, a man building his own stairway to heaven, thinking that by his own means he can justify himself and achieve, you know, eternal glory. That's what the mysteries are really about. That's what the Egyptian kings were about, constructing these great pyramids. And, you know, even though the Bible says we brought nothing into this world and it sure will take nothing out, the Egyptian kings went to great lengths to try and take all with them, their slaves, their servants, their riches, food, clothing, everything. And it is the antithesis of what we're called to as Christians by faith in our Lord Jesus Christ. One of the things that I've always found to be an interesting contrast is that that while the ambition of the ancient Egyptians was to have their names recorded in the Book of the Dead.
Hold that right there for us, just a moment.
Sure.
Well, this is Dr. Stan, and our guest is Chris Pinto. His video, or DVD, is called The Secret Mysteries of America's Beginning. I will tell you, it's one of the most gripping videos you've ever seen. It's almost 3 hours long, and it really will hold you every step of the way as you begin to understand how these ancient mysteries that then were reduplicated at the time of when America was originally founded, and their influence on what's going on in the world today, because so much of what's going on in the world really doesn't make sense unless you understand the secret societies and their influence at the time America was founded and their influence in the United States today. And you can go to their websites, you can go to their temple. If you live in the Monterey Bay area where I live, you can go over the hills to their temple in San Jose. Go ahead.
Yeah, we in fact we show a lot of footage from San Jose and the AMORC there in their Egyptian museum, which is a pretty interesting place to go. They've got a number of mummies and a lot of you know, some authentic and some recreations of Egyptian ancient artifacts and so on. It's a fascinating, you know, day tour to go over there. But it really shows that that Rosicrucianism and Freemasonry have this very direct link to the ancient Egyptian mysteries, which is, as Bill Schneblin says in our video, our DVD, he says that Egypt is really the fountainhead of all the occult traditions. And you really see that when you go there and you begin to see the pervasiveness of this movement. And it's so important to remember that these gods and these goddesses that are represented are all gods that were condemned by Yahweh, the God of the Bible, in the land of Egypt. That this is what God was doing with the many miracles that he wrought through Moses and Aaron when he sent them in to draw out the children of Israel. And there are a lot of studies that have been done. There's a lot of, you know, interesting investigation about why God chose to do certain miracles, you know, why he cast darkness over the land for 3 days, because it's believed the Egyptian priests would have gone and cried out to the sun god, Ra, you know, overthrow this god of the Hebrews, and so on. And then they would slowly come to realize that their gods had no power over Yahweh, the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. And so, as God says to Pharaoh at one point, he says, these things will come to pass so that you will know that there is none like me in all the earth. And so God separates himself and reveals himself to be the Most High God above all these other powers and principalities that are called God in falsehood, really. As Christians, we believe they are no gods and they have no power to save or to deliver.
And of course, really what's so exciting is when you understand that, you know, what we're seeing being enacted today is this story that was predicted thousands and thousands of years ago, that there would come a time like this, as it was in the days of Noah. And of course, in the days of Noah, it would appear that perhaps this is where Atlantis lived, and Atlantis was destroyed. And yet it is that these people who are in positions of power in religious organizations and political organizations and people of great wealth today, many of them tied into the secret societies who want to recreate lost Atlantis. That's what it's really about, and you bring that out very well in your DVD.
Well, that's what the thing that really fascinated me was reading parts of Sir Francis Bacon's book, or actually reading his book, The New Atlantis, which was the last thing that he wrote before he died. And it was, he's writing about this society called Bensalam, and this society is like on this secret island, and these Christian sailors are, you know, coming and they stumble across it. And the thing that's really interesting and troubling, once you really study Bacon, is that Bacon writes quite fluently about Christianity. And if you read various passages that he's talking about, you could really be led to believe, because he's very familiar with the scriptures, and he's quoting scriptures constantly, and various Christian principles and so on, but then he mixes in these ancient gods, you know, Pallas Athena and Apollo and so on, into his writings and whatnot. And it's there are times when you read his work and it really seems like he would be a convicted Christian man, and then there are times when you recognize that he's quoting these pagan gods and goddesses and so on. But this society of Bensalam, at one point, he makes reference to America, okay, as Atlantis of old.
And of course, you're talking, he's writing this probably in the 1626. He died in 1626.
Yeah, so it was published after his death, so he's writing it somewhere in the 1620s. And of course, by this point, America has already been discovered or rediscovered, if you will.
Hold that thought right there, Chris. We'll be back in just a moment here at Radio Liberty. Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty. Our guest is Chris Pinto. We're talking about his DVD and or video, the Secret Mysteries of America's Beginning, talking about as Sir Francis Bacon. Now, most people don't know much about Sir Francis Bacon, and yet he has probably done more to shape the world in which you live today than any other, like, you're not going to say living, I would say long since dead individual, but his influence is here. His Rosicrucian influence is him. And, of course, the Rosicrucian was a continuation of the Gnostics, the Kabbalah, all of these manifestations of the ancient mysteries from the ancient pagan gods. So, go ahead, Chris.
Yeah, Bacon is a little talked about today character in American history and in world history. I mean, I remember trying to do research about Bacon, even though there are many, many books that are written about him specifically. If you read modern history books, if you were to go get a modern history book on the Elizabethan era or on England and other reference books, whether they're written by English scholars or American scholars or whoever, Bacon would seem like a very minor, almost, you know, in some books not mentioned at all, sort of character. And yet, at one point, Ian Taylor, who is himself English, and he's an older man, he makes the comment. He says, you know, there was a time when every schoolboy used to know who Francis Bacon was and what his contribution was.
And, of course, many people, and you bring this out in the video, many people, at least in the past, have believed that William Shakespeare did not write Shakespeare, but that Bacon and his associates did.
Yeah, his literary society, sometimes called the Knights of the Helmet. But they were a literary group, and among them were people like Christopher Marlowe, Sir Walter Raleigh, and others. Men who were great poets and writers, Ben Jonson, the famed poet, Ben Jonson, who writes the dedicatory opening to the Shakespeare Folio in 1623. A lot of these guys were part of what is commonly called the Baconian Circle, the group of artists and writers and so on, thinkers who were associated with Bacon, and they were also, a number of them were a member of Queen Elizabeth's Secret Service.
Well, because here again you see the secret societies infiltrating the intelligence units even of ancient Great Britain, just as the secret societies work within the intelligence units throughout the world today.
Right, and in fact the secret society, the Rosicrucians, it's believed, were formed in England specifically for the purpose of protecting Queen Elizabeth from assassination.
Hold that thought for just a moment here. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest is Chris Pinto, and Chris was just saying that the secret society that Sir Francis Bacon was part of, seemed to have many members who were actually associated with the intelligence unit, intelligence organizations in England, and we're talking about the 1600s. But I think we will find the intelligence units have always been infiltrated by members of the secret societies, just as they are today. So pick up the story there.
Yeah, that's the thing that I found to be very interesting. When we interviewed Peter Dawkins, who's the founder and president of the Francis Bacon Research Trust in England, and he's considered by many researchers to be probably the foremost expert on Francis Bacon in the world. And he has dedicated his life to studying Bacon, really just anybody associated with Bacon, especially Queen Elizabeth and so on, and the whole Shakespearean era. And according to Dawkins, the Rosicrucians in England came about the same year that Queen Elizabeth came to the throne. And he explains how when Elizabeth became queen, she was a Protestant queen. And of course, this was in Europe at a time when Europe was largely dominated by Roman Catholicism, coming through the Dark Ages. And so immediately Elizabeth's life was threatened, and you know the Pope issued an edict against her. At one point, excommunicates her, and so on. And so the word went out, for the overthrow of Queen Elizabeth. And so there were all sorts of spies and Jesuits and assassins that were trying to find a way to either overthrow or assassinate the queen. And so the English formed this protective circle around her, and at the nucleus of that circle, according to Dawkins, was this Rosicrucian order. And so they were a secret society right from the beginning, and developing intelligence networks and so on. and using secret codes and ciphers to communicate with each other throughout Europe. And a lot of those things, because these guys were also writers and poets, they knew about language. And so they were, from these codes and ciphers, they were developing new words and in a process of advancing the English language itself, which is why during that era, the Elizabethan era, the English language became more formalized. It developed rules and a system, you know, with dictionaries and a way that people could learn it other than just growing up in that society and trying to pick it up. And the language reached its great height. That's, you know, this is the era of Shakespeare and English literature. We have classes on English literature today, largely because of the huge advancement that took place during this time period.
I thought it was so fascinating that Mr. D, or Dr. D, who was there in the latter part of the 1500s, part of the intelligence unit, and he signed his letters with 007?
Yeah, that's one of the interesting tidbits. We point out John Dee, who was believed to be Francis Bacon's mentor. In a nutshell, that's why he's significant. But also, he was considered like the foremost scientist of his time. He was responsible for, you know, developing navigational tools for sailors and things like that. But he was part of the Queen's intelligence network, and whenever he was very close to Queen Elizabeth, and he was known as the Queen's astrologer, and when he signed his letters to her, he would always sign them 007. And apparently Ian Fleming based initially his concept for James Bond on Dr. John Dee. And of course he developed it from there, and James Bond became this very suave character, rather than like Dee, who was sort of a wizened old man with a long gray beard and so on. But Dee is, as we point out in the documentary, he's been the role model for a number of things, believed to be the inspiration for Dr. Faustus, believed to be the inspiration for Gandalf in Tolkien's Lord of the Rings series. J.K. Rowling apparently used John Dee as sort of her model for Albus Dumbledore, the professor in the Harry Potter books. In fact, if you were to go to a Harry Potter website, you could find references to Mortlake, which was Dr. John Dee's home, where he had this great library, which was the largest and most developed library in Europe at that time. Dee was very much a magician. He was into magic. He was into channeling or communicating with spirits, demonic spirits specifically. And they gave him a lot of knowledge and a lot of information. He developed this whole system of magic that's used by occultists even today, been used by occultists like Aleister Crowley and others, called this Enochian system of magic or angel magic and so on. This is a very influential individual. And this is the guy who was believed to be a kind of mentor to Francis Bacon. And he was the chief of the Rosicrucians, and then at some point, Bacon took over the Rosicrucian order from Dr. John Dee. And as Dawkins explains it, Dee was persecuted in his lifetime because he was involved in witchcraft openly. And so he was, you know, there were people who condemned him. There were people who, you know, wanted to kill him. They burned his library at one point. And so on. But he says that Bacon, Dawkins now, says that Bacon was just more careful than Dee. And his suggestion is not that Bacon had a different way of doing things. He just was more secretive and more guarded about it than Dee was.
And everybody, you learn so much from this DVD, but it's done in such a dramatic way that, you know, it's a real pleasure. You watch that thing for 3 hours, and you're just disappointed when it ends, and you just couldn't stop watching it. So well done. I think you really did a tremendous job of putting this together and then carrying these ideas forward so we can begin to see the occult influences that exist in America today.
Well, that was a huge part of our endeavor in this was, you know, there's for years, as we know, Dr. Stan, this debate over, you know, why was America founded? Is America a Christian nation? Is it a humanist nation? Is it a pagan nation? What was the purpose for the founding of America? And there's a lot of icons. You know, I remember getting an email from a Christian relative in my family who sent me an email about the Washington Monument. And because at the top of it, it says, Glory to God, they were asserting that this was a symbol of America's godly heritage. And I wrote back and I said, do you know what the Washington Monument symbolizes? This is an Egyptian obelisk. It's this huge pagan phallic symbol. It has nothing to do with God, the God of the Bible. God says, you know, I am the Lord, that is my name, and my glory I will not give to another, nor my praise to carved images. So God's not going to give his praise to some carved Egyptian idol or icon out there. And I think a lot of Christians are confused about the founding of our country, how it really came about, who was a godly Christian man and who wasn't, and so on. And so our desire with this has been sort of, it's been like Ezekiel 22, where God calls for his priests to put a difference between the holy and the profane, those things which are of God and then those things which are clearly not a part of what he wants us to take part in. And unfortunately, here in America, a lot of America's signs and symbols and so on, I mean, if we were founded as a Christian nation only, you know, why do we have the Washington Monument? Why do we have this all-seeing eye on the back of the dollar bill? Why is one of America's icons, the Statue of Liberty, this image to the pagan mother goddess of the ancient world? If we're a Christian nation, why aren't our national emblems depictions of Christ and the apostles and the miracles of Jesus and the resurrection and so on? And so clearly there's a disconnect here. It's not a simple matter of saying, well, we were founded as a Christian nation and that's it. Clearly something else was going on and has been going on along the way.
And of course the thing that I think is so important for people to understand is that at the time America was founded, there were two forces here. One were the occult and the secret societies, the other was the Christian. And so you had the Christians, they wanted a Christian nation. The occultists wanted eventually to capture control of America and use our military and financial might to dominate the world, which is why we are fighting in Iraq today. Why are we there? Why? So we can keep a permanent base there, so we can dominate that part of the world. That was the goal of the ancient mystery religions. And that is simply has come forth to dominate American policy today as Christianity begins to ebb here in the United States, as we take God and prayer out and the Ten Commandments out of our schools, as Christianity is under attack. Why, of course, the occult influence that was here at the time of the American Revolution certainly is being... The occult influence is coming forward and dominating, and the Christian influence is being suppressed. That's really what's going on today, but nobody ever wants to tell the American people that.
Yeah, it's true. I mean, it's that's why we start out the documentary with this quote that you mentioned earlier, Dr. Stan, from President Bush in his 2005 inaugural address, where he talks about, you know, when our founders declared a new order of the ages, they were acting on an ancient hope that is meant to be fulfilled. And we believe this ancient hope is this concept of a new Atlantis. And it really seems like that's what is happening in America today. It's why we're going to spread democracy around the world and using at times draconian means to try and bring it about. And there's a real interesting dynamic there. I mean, you and I as Christians, we believe at some point this is going to take a very dark turn. It's already dark in a lot of ways. But at some point, what will emerge will be a world empire that will be, you know, the Bible talks about the world being ruled by 10 kings, according to the book of Revelation and the book of Daniel. And then ultimately those 10 kings are to give their power over to one man. And that man, we believe, is Antichrist, the false Christ. And this is a person who is prophesied not only in the Bible, but if you start getting into New Age prophecies, if you read books like Reflections on the Christ by David Spangler, if you read the writings of Alice Bailey and others, they talk about the coming of the Christ. if you...
But not, the, not Jesus Christ, but the Christ, and which, of course, is the Antichrist.
Right, exactly. So they're talking about the Christ. Well, I mean, as a Christian, certainly you should have a huge red flag go up when you read David Spangler and he tells you that Lucifer is the power that brings you to Christ. Well, right there, we should know.
Well, I'd be a little suspicious anyway.
Exactly.
No, there's people, you see, they don't tell people. But the stories of the Bible are not ancient stories. They're being enacted right before us today. And, you know, the phrase you referred to, and I hope our listeners will go ahead, and you can go to whitehouse.gov and get President Bush's second inaugural address. About the third paragraph from the end, he says, when our founders declared the new order of the ages, or a new order of the ages, and then he has some gobbledygook in there to confuse you, and then he says they were declaring an ancient hope that is meant to be fulfilled. And what is the ancient hope? It's the new order of the ages. What is the new order of the ages? If you go to your computer and you type in Google, new order of the ages, what comes up? Novus Ordo Seclorum. The slogan beneath the unfinished pyramid on the back of the dollar bill. That's what he's referring to. And there wasn't one in 10,000 Americans who recognized what the president was saying and why we're working throughout the whole world to bring about these democracies, which if you look and see what they are, they're not democracies. They're cruel, in many instances, ruthless dictatorships we're financing throughout the world today. So there's a great deal of disconnect between what they say and what they're really doing. But they're bringing about this one world government under the control of the Antichrist.
Yeah, it's very interesting. You know, you whenever the president gives a speech, you have all of this dialogue among news analysts and reporters and journalists and so on. They talk about, well, the president said this 27 times, and 13 and a half times he mentioned this, and then 22 times he mentioned that. After that inaugural address, there was not one commentary. Nobody, for a minute, asked the question, what was the ancient hope that he was referring to? And he says, this is an ancient hope that is meant to be fulfilled. Well, is his administration working to fulfill it? What's he talking about? You know, they didn't go and have an investigation and go and ask anybody at the White House, well, what did President Bush mean by this? And what's he talking about? Does the rest of America know about this ancient hope? There was no mention of it whatsoever.
But, you know, I never read more praise for a speech than was given to President Bush for his second inaugural address. In fact, that's the subject, I believe, of my March newsletter where I reduplicate the speech. But I put in all the praise, and all of these pundits from the New York Times and the Washington Post and the Wall Street Journal, and when they're all praising the president, you better be very suspicious, because they know something we don't know. They know what the ancient hope is. They just don't want us common folks to know.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. It's a very difficult, very complicated issue. One of the things that I wanted to try and point out in this documentary was this concept of rebuilding paradise on Earth. Because one of the questions that we get since we've been talking to people about the New World Order is, you know, well, how do they get people involved in this movement in every generation? I mean, do they know that they're building the empire of Antichrist? Do they know that they're building this world dictatorship? And I think there are some of them who do. In fact, it's very clear that there are some who do. But I think a lot of people who are supporting the New World Order movement really believe that they're doing what's best for mankind, and that they're making tough decisions that they have to make, even though it's what the end justifies the means, that kind of thing. And I think they believe that they're building paradise, or that they're leading mankind into this golden era. I mean, I've interviewed some of these people, like Peter Dawkins, and when you talk to these guys, they don't seem to have any kind of a diabolical intent within them. They don't believe that they're a part of some evil, horrible movement. They really believe that they're bringing light to the world. And of course, as Christians, we know that Satan transforms himself into an angel of light. And this concept of Lucifer, I mean, the name Lucifer means light bearer. And they will even tell you, I've interviewed, you know, at least one very, very deeply involved New Age occultist who defended the idea of Lucifer as the light bearer. I didn't see anything wrong with it. And so I think we should have compassion toward these people, to pray for them and try to reach out to them somehow. And that's what we're trying to do with the work.
And you really did a great job. And of course, the video DVD is entitled The Secret Mysteries of America's Beginning. 3 hours of gripping, really, a presentation. A lot of enactments, a lot of documentation, a lot of interviews, and I even have a little place in that. You know, but what a privilege it was to be there with some of the other people who really understand what's going on today, trying to inform the American people who are involved in a spiritual battle for the souls of men and the survival, perhaps even the loss, of Christian civilization. Well, Chris, we've got 3 minutes to wrap up the program. Do you want to go ahead and give your parting thoughts for our listeners?
Well, you know, it's been fascinating doing the research and learning more about what's going on and about this one world movement and just how far back it goes. And you know, when we were developing Secret Mysteries, one of the best comments that we've gotten since it's been released has been from Christians who talk about how this is a very unique witnessing tool, because people feel like they can show this to just about anybody. You can show it to your friends or your family members who are not believers, and they watch, and we've put this together to be a History Channel style presentation. So there's a lot of history involved, and it's like something you might see on National Geographic or the History Channel or something like that. It's in a documentary format. But what our brothers and sisters are telling us is that once their family members or their friends watch it, it opens doors of opportunity. It brings up subject matter. It brings up things involving both Christianity and the pagan belief systems. And it opens a door of opportunity to witness to them and talk to them about the things of God and the teachings of the Bible. And hopefully, for those who are informed about these things, to talk to them about how these things all fit in with God's prophecies and God's plan for salvation through His Son. And so that's ultimately the purpose of the work, and that's why we put it together.
Well, I really think that, Chris, when you understand what's going on today, people really need to find something they can believe in. And of course, that was this realization some 44 years ago that caused me to want to be exploring the possibilities that came through Christianity and eventually brought me into a personal relationship with our Lord. So I hope that this tool will be a very effective one, will reach out and reach an awful lot of people. And it's done in such a manner and presented in a way that most people are not going to know what it's about until they're pretty well through this, and they're so deeply involved emotionally through the means of film. Why, you could impact on people emotionally. You've done a great job with it, Chris. Thanks for everything you did, and thanks for including me in your efforts.
Well, thank you very much, Dr. Stan. Just so your listeners know, Dr. Stan plays a big role in this documentary, and he's awesome. He does a great job.
God bless you. Thanks very much.
Thank you very much, Dr. Stan.
Bye-bye.
God bless you, too. Bye-bye.
Okay, fine. Well, I'm not sure what a great job I did, but I do have the opportunity of sharing some of my thoughts to try to clarify this spiritual battle that's going on today, as we do time and time again here at Radio Liberty. So we'll be back in just a minute to finish up our program. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and this is the time when I need to remind our listeners Radio Liberty is listener-supported, and we do carry the video DVD. You can get in either format of The Secret Mysteries of America's Beginning, and let me recommend to you, it is an excellent source of entertainment, an excellent source of information, and an excellent tool that you can use to witness to other people, because once they've seen this, they will begin to understand really what's going on today. And then, of course, Chris has put out another couple of videos, the Megiddo 1, Megiddo 2. If you haven't seen them, you really need to. And then, of course, he works very closely with our good friend, Pastor Joe Schimmel, who put out They Sold Their Souls for Rock and Roll, the 3-hour, the 4-hour, the 10-hour version. And if you haven't seen those, let me recommend that you do. They are very well done. They are very, very informative, but they will touch you and touch your life very deeply. So again, that is They Sold Their Souls for Rock and Roll, Megiddo 1, Megiddo 2, and The Secret Mysteries of America's Beginning, and they're all available by calling 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-544-8927. Were there really secret societies behind the revolutions that swept through Europe during the 18th and 19th, and even into the 20th century? Well, we suggest an amazing book. It's entitled Fire in the Minds of Men. In fact, if you read the text of President Bush's second inaugural address, he will tell you about fire in the minds of men. Where did the term come from? Why, it came from this book, written by James H. Billington, originally came from Dostoevsky, from a book he wrote about the world revolution called The Possessed, but the more modern book written in 1980 by James H. Billington, the Librarian of Congress, Fire in the Minds of Men, where he tells you that the whole world revolutionary movement really began when a group of literary intellectuals took their lighted candles off of Masonic altars, off of Christian altars, and moved them to Masonic altars, and the whole revolution is not related to the Enlightenment, as you've been told, but to people who are fascinated with secret societies and secret organizations. Now, Professor Billington stays away very much from what happened in America, but he covers the influence of the revolutionary movement in Europe, beginning, of course, at the time of the American Revolution, the French Revolution, and following it all the way through to the Russian Revolution. The revolution, however, continues to this day. Our government recently toppled the government of Nepal and brought the Maoists to power, just as we toppled the government of Cuba and brought Fidel Castro to power, as we toppled the government of Iran and brought the Ayatollah Khomeini to power, as we toppled the nationalist Chinese and government in China and brought the communists to power there, and the communists to power in Rhodesia, Mugabe in Zimbabwe is a communist, the Marxists now a complete control of South Africa and Southwest Africa, and Angola largely financed by Chevron Oil Company. But nobody's going to tell you that. You're supposed to believe that there's a real battle going on between capitalism and communism, or the West and Islam, and of course these are all engineered. All of this is being manipulated. You have a controlled opposition in each instance. And until people understand what's really going on, they're going to be totally misled as we move towards World War III. And if this should come about, the destruction of the world that we've enjoyed living in for such a long period of time, we're entering a very difficult time for our nation. And you must understand that behind all of this are powerful spiritual forces. If you have not yet read my pamphlets on the occult hierarchy, the three of them are based on my newsletters, some of them written by Dr. Dennis Ketty. Why, you can get them by calling 1-800-544-8927. Let me suggest you read my last four newsletters. They're up on the webpage at radioliberty.com. The April newsletter will be there very soon, introducing you to the angel who rides in the whirlwind and directs his storm. That was, of course, from the first inaugural speech. Who is the angel who rides in the whirlwind and directs his storm? Well, you'll have to read the newsletter. Please pray for America.